The 82-game preseason is in the books, and it's finally time for the real season. Don't miss out on any of the NBA playoff action at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. From the play-in tournament through the finals, DraftKings Sportsbook has you covered. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code SMASH. New customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets instantly. That's code SMASH, only on DraftKings. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or in West Virginia. Visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas, 21 and over, age varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.co/bball for eligibility and deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
Point out the colors of you. I see them too, and boy, I like them. I like them. I like them. We way too fly to partake in all this hate. We out here vibing. We vibing. We vibing.
Alexa, play Ariana Grande.
Okay.
With Amazon Music, a voice is all you need. Get tens of millions of songs. Download the Amazon Music app today.
What's up, everybody? Welcome into the latest Windy City Gridiron Radio. This is Robert Sablinski with you, as always, host of WCG Radio. You can follow us on Twitter at WCG or at WC Gridiron. Follow me on Twitter at Robert Sablinski. And today, following the Bears' heartbreaking loss to the Packers on Sunday, we're going to start previewing their next game, their home opener for the 2018 season against the Seattle Seahawks. To help preview said matchup, I've brought on the field goals Jackson Bevins, who you can follow on Twitter, at Jackson Bevins, and that's at JacsonBevens, and you'll see his screen name, the disrespect has been noted. Jackson, what's up, man?
Hey, thanks for having me on, Robert. I appreciate it, man.
Let's jump right into it. I noted to you that I wanted to, that we should talk about the offense. That's probably going to be the key matchup in this game. How the Seahawks plan to block Khalil Mack after going against Von Miller in the Broncos defense. And I didn't really go entirely well, just looking at the box score itself. Six sacks, three for Miller alone, eight tackles for loss, 11 quarterback hits. Jackson, what happened?
Yeah, well, Von Miller happened. I mean, you know, I think Seattle decided they didn't want to sacrifice an offensive weapon every play of the game by keeping someone in to help Jermaine Ifedi with Von Miller. And the result was, they were counting on Russell Wilson and his borderline unparalleled escapability to kind of help neutralize that a little bit. And there were some plays where that really worked, and it really opened up with, rookie tight end Will Dissly getting over 100 yards. Number of successful pass plays to running backs. Those are players that would normally stay in to help if you're going to chip block on a guy like Miller. And I think especially once Baldwin left with a knee injury, they were so devoid of weapons that they couldn't afford to sacrifice any others. And it was just sort of which poison do you want to drink? And there were, Von Miller got three sacks as a result. He had Jermaine Ifedi and no shot against him. And Jermaine Ifedi's going to have no shot against Khalil Mack either. So it'll be really interesting with Baldwin out this week to see if they do decide to try and keep a tight end in to help block, or, if they double on the edge and allow some pressure up the middle and let Russ deal with it that way. But, I think it's going to be ugly. I think you guys are going to get four or five sacks.
On the other side, you keep talking about Jermaine Ifedi. How did Dwayne Brown hold up? Probably someone that was more matched up more often against Chubb. I don't anticipate that Khalil Mack will be going off and against him, but the Bears will exploit that matchup. But there's obviously also Leonard Floyd and Keen Hicks to deal with on the other side.
Yeah, Dwayne Brown is great. I think that he is a top 10 left tackle in the league and is definitely the anchor of that line. There's no question that Seattle has played better since acquiring him on the offensive line than they did before. And the thing is like you've got kind of a stalwart on the left side and a unknown quantity at best that's optimistic on the right side. If you've got an elite pass rusher, why waste him against Dwayne Brown? You know, I imagine that we'll see Dak coming off the right side of the offense a lot more often, just like he's doing against Green Bay. And, I mean, you know, Dwayne Brown is definitely not anyone we're worried about over here. It's everybody else.
I saw that – so Rashad Penny was the Seahawks – one of the Seahawks' top draft picks this year, and I saw that Chris Carson actually got more time and more touches than him against the Broncos. What's the story there, and is that going to be something that Seattle uses to try to mitigate the Bears' pass rush?
Yeah, I mean, the story there is pretty succinct. Chris Carson's the better running back right now. You know, Rashad Penny has some pretty remarkable upside. He was definitely a surprise first-round pick. Wasn't really on a lot of our radars. But we've gotten pretty used to that with John Schneider and Pete Carroll picking guys. And, you know, we're talking about a running back who led the NFL, or led college football in yards after contact, led college football in yards rushing, had, I think, one of the five or six highest rushing totals in the history of college football. He was second only to Saquon Barkley in missed tackles forced. Last year at San Diego State. So, you know, the potential is definitely there. But Chris Carson is an undrafted running back who sort of worked his way into the starter's role last year before he hurt his leg and missed the rest of the season. But over the last two seasons, even in limited work, you can just see the way that he moves is different and better than any other running backs on the roster. It's more powerful. You know, he averaged over 7 yards a carry against Denver last year, added another 30 yards or so through the air, and had a 60-yarder called back on a block that had nothing to do with a hold that was on a block that had nothing to do with the play. So, I mean, he very easily could have had, you know, 150 yards in that game, and Seattle would have had more points if that didn't get called back. You know, that turned first and 10 in field goal range into first and 20 on their own 15. So, you know, Chris Carson is just – he looks like a really, really effective running back. And Pete Carroll has been pretty open over the last 2 days saying that he's going to get the bulk of the work against you guys.
I know he's not exactly lighting it up, but I have to ask the question. Is there almost sometimes regret of not having Marshawn Lynch still in there, especially seeing him sometimes make those original flash plays like he did against the Rams on Monday night?
Yeah, of course. You know, I mean, you're talking about a Hall of Fame running back. You're talking about a guy that defensive players speak about reverentially. You can't just replace that. Now, when Marshawn first left, the Seahawks had a guy named Thomas Rawls, who's another undrafted guy, or maybe a seventh-round pick. Anyway, kind of an afterthought. And he, in his first five games, averaged something like 140 yards per game from the ground, had two 200-yard rushing games, which is more than Marshawn Lynch has ever had in his career in a game, and it looked like Seattle was going to be set. Then he broke his ankle and just has not been the same since, and it's just been a bunch of Eddie Lacy and Mike Davis and C.J. Procise and a bunch of guys behind a bad line that can't make it work. And so, yeah, you know, it'd be great to have Marshawn in those situations. But I think the time had come for them to move on. Marshawn and Pete Carroll reportedly weren't talking to each other. It sounds like there was a lot of division being sown within that locker room about the decision to pass on that final play in the Super Bowl instead of give it to Marshawn again. And I think it was just time to move on. Also, Marshawn averaged like 3 yards per carry in his last year with Seattle. So, yeah, do we miss him? Would it be great to have Pete Marshawn? Absolutely. The other thing is, when Seattle's leading the NFL in rushing yards every year from 2012 through 2014, they were doing it when the league was basically not allowing defenders to hit the quarterback on read option. And that's why you had Russell Wilson rushing for 700-800 yards a year, is because they run that read option. Zone blocking was still allowed. And you had defense up you have this two-headed rushing monster, the most gifted rushing quarterback, and maybe the most gifted running back, and you didn't know who was going to have the ball, but you were only allowed to hit one of them. And they just changed the rules, which means if the quarterback fakes a handoff, he's still free game. And, you know, Seattle's not interested in having their franchise quarterback get hit 20 times a game. So they haven't really figured out how to run that's happened. But yeah, would Marshawn Lynch help? Yes. Would it make them demonstrably better right now? I don't know.
You know, Wilson, them not having an interest in Wilson getting hit 20 times a game because of the read option rules. I imagine that's why the offense has transitioned so much to where he's producing. What was the number last year? Like 60 or 70% of the Seahawks offense? I remember some kind of crazy figure. I'm sure you have, even on the top of your head, like where he's producing most of the yards rushing and passing. Is that why the transition happened, or is it just that the Seahawks playmakers got better, or a combination of everything?
Yeah, I think the rule change is probably one of the biggest catalysts. And I mean, you talk about Russ's huge share of the offense last year. He actually accounted for 87%.
Oh, it was 87%. I was underselling it. Okay. Go on.
Which was an NFL record. He scored 38 of, or was responsible for 38 of their 39 offensive touchdowns. It was also an NFL record. And honestly, that had everything to do with the fact that the line couldn't block anybody. And so there was no rushing game. I think Mike Davis was their leading rusher among running backs last year with 250 yards. So you're talking about, you know, what's that, 16 yards a game. And so the burden that was placed on Russell offensively last year was just unbelievable. And he balled out. I mean, if the Seahawks don't miss three end-of-game field goals last year, and they go 11-5 or 12-4 and win the division, I think Russell Wilson's your MVP. But, you know, the Tom Cable's offense worked back when the rules allowed it to work. I think he really put the team at a disadvantage over the last 3 years by trying to convert guys, by running an offense that is predicated on a lot of cut blocking in a time when the NFL doesn't really allow that anymore. So I think that was really Russ kind of being a superhero in situations that very few other quarterbacks could handle or even survive. So I think this year when they brought in Mike Solari, who's more of a man-blocking running game, Brian Schottenheimer, who, you know, is a little bit of a milquetoast offensive coordinator hire, but is someone that all the quarterbacks he's worked with have had, you know, great things to say. And if you look at their production in the years they've had Schottenheimer, they've been up compared to their career averages. I think the goal is to try and get something of a more traditional running game back in place to try and save Russ.
We only really have the preseason to work off of in one game, but what are your impressions of Schottenheimer? You kind of just alluded to it there. What's he going to have to do to get this offense to be more stable?
You know, it's so tough. The offensive coordinator is always the least popular guy in
charge. Yeah.
Everyone who's ever picked up a bad controller thinks they can call a better offense. A lot, so too early to tell. I know they wanted to run the ball more. Every coach says they want to run the ball more. They handed the ball off, I think, 14 times, which is ridiculous. But again, game script was behind them. They put themselves in a lot of bad situations on first and second down, which makes it tough to run. But I do think they will attempt to run the ball more this week than they did last week, but way too early to say whether Schottenheimer's a good hire or not.
Brandon Marshall isn't a starter, correct? He was playing in place of Baldwin, I see. Or am I misspeaking?
Who's that, Brandon Marshall?
Yes.
Yeah, I think he's sort of their de facto second outside receiver. I mean, really, beyond the top two receivers, which in Seattle's case are Doug Baldwin and Tyler Lockett, most teams are doing a rotation. And Brandon Marshall, I think, before Baldwin left, was being seen more in third down and red zone situations, which is where he's still extremely gifted. And he had a great game in that. In fact, he was the only Seahawk to convert third downs in that game. And, you know, basically caught two touchdowns. One of them was called back on a kind of ticky-tack offensive PI. One that he admitted was probably technically pass interference. But anyway, he's definitely a starter now with Baldwin out. And I think after his performance, he probably supplanted Jerron Brown as the second outside guy anyway. I think Jerron Brown only had one target in the game. But, yeah, I think Brandon Marshall, a guy you guys are obviously familiar with, is still got something, and he's a big target on a team that's kind of devoid of them. So yeah, I'm excited to see how he plays throughout the year, and I think he can be a legit wide receiver two, wide receiver three, but it's doubtful that he'll be spectacular.
Was signing him more of just something trying to salvage something out of the offense, get it potentially, like you just kind of noted, a red zone weapon? I mean, he's 34 years old. Like we've just been saying, we're not sure how much he really has left in the tank. It's more his physical tools coming into play in that red area.
Totally. You know, he was definitely a late flyer. They gave him the minimum guaranteed money. I don't know that they expected him to make it out of camp. I think it was similar to them bringing Terrell Owens in a few years back. And they've brought in some older receivers in past camps to see if they have anything left. And Marshall just went in there and kind of dominated training camp. I was fortunate enough to attend one of them, followed training camps pretty closely, and no one could really guard him. And, you know, Russell Wilson, for as good as he's been in his career, and I truly believe he's a top four quarterback in the NFL, he's been kind of just okay in the red zone. And when you're a shorter quarterback, it's difficult to throw in the red zone. Russell Wilson throws such a nice deep ball, and it's reflected in his deep ball efficiency. But when you're short, throwing it short is difficult, especially against a packed-in defense, because that ball doesn't have time to turn over and come back down like it kind of does with a taller quarterback. And so last year with Jimmy Graham, all of a sudden he was amazing in the red zone because he finally had a receiver that gave him a margin for error. He didn't have to make a pinpoint pass to a Tyler Lockett or a Jermaine Kearse or a Doug Baldwin, who are 6 feet and under. You know, he had a big guy. And I think when they decided to let Jimmy Graham go to Green Bay, they really felt the need that, okay, when we get down in there, we got to give Russ someone to pass to. And Marshall, you know, if Marshall is even 80% of what he was when he was with you guys, he was probably the best option out there. And it looks like he's going to be about 80% of what he was with you guys, which is awesome.
Jackson, what is the issue with the offensive line? Because this has been a consistent running issue for several years now, and it's not as if the Seahawks haven't invested draft capital and free agency. And is it the coaching? Is it the system you mentioned earlier? Why can't the Seahawks get around? I'm sure this is a frustrating question that you guys are tired of dealing with.
No, but I mean it's a very fair question. It's something that is, you know, relevant. It's been relevant for a long time. It's, you know, I mean, they haven't been able to block anyone in about 4 years. And you're asking me, I think it was coaching. I think Tom Cable was asking guys to do things they had no chance of doing. I mean, the thing to keep in mind when talking about offensive line play is there's only maybe 6, 7, 8 teams that have good offensive line play. The gap in athleticism between offensive linemen and defensive linemen has widened so much in the past 7, 8, 10 years. You know, there's no, very few Aaron Donalds and J.J. Watson, Khalil Max and Von Millers that are playing offensive line, right? I mean, if you're 280 plus and a freak athlete, are you going to play offensive line or are you going to play defensive line, right? Where's the money? Where's the longer career at? Where's the glory at? You know, so I think that's really at the heart of it is you've got a huge athleticism gap between offensive line and defensive line. Plus, defenders are just allowed to do more with their hands than offensive linemen are. I mean, it's just the deck is stacked against Solon. So that has to be kept in mind. But I think the biggest issue was Tom Cable asking guys to block in space in a league that no longer allows cut blocking in the way that they used to. And so, you know, basically you're asking a converted basketball player or a former tight end or a former defensive lineman to try and block an otherworldly athlete, a Danielle Hunter or somebody, in a space the size of a boxing ring. I mean, there's just no shot of success there. And I think with Solari, their new offensive line coach came over from New York and before that San Francisco back when they were beating everybody up in the run earlier this decade. He asks his guys to engage the defender a lot earlier, takes them out of space, and I think at least gives them a chance. So I'm hopeful that happens, but I think that Tom Cable is just using an outdated system that didn't give his guys a chance to be successful, and we're hoping that changes
now. Yeah. aside from Khalil Mack, obviously, at this point, we said it at the start of the show, he's probably going to get his. He's more than likely going to get his. What is one matchup that concerns you if you're the Seahawks and the Bears on the Bears defense? There's one individual matchup or one like coaching point or whatever.
No, honestly, I mean, I think on plays that, I mean, y'all got a good defense. Make no mistake. I think people weren't aware of how good your defense was last year because your offense was so bad. Wow. And you know, it's just tough when the defense is behind the eight ball all the time. So, you know, in this situation, I think you guys good secondary, good linebackers. I think Roquan's going to be great. But there's not, I mean, if gun to my head, I would say the fact that Seattle doesn't have its best receiver is going to be really, really tough. You know, that combination of if Khalil Mack's getting pressure, I don't know that they have anybody who's really good at getting open in a three-step drop back. Like Baldwin was so good at that, you know. And they've got a lot of kind of possession receivers and some guys who are deep threats. But if Russ has to get the ball out early, you know, I think your corners are more than capable of jumping a few routes. So, yeah, I'd say I'm concerned with that for sure.
Concerned with everything, essentially.
Yeah, but I also, I mean, again, I believe we're talking about, you know, one of the four best quarterbacks in the world, and that's the most valuable asset that you can have.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
You know, that neutralizes a lot.
In the end, Jackson, how do you see this game playing out? So you just said it, Russell Wilson, the equalizer. That's what still gives me pause because I'm not very confident in the Bears' offense. This is kind of the game where, to me, Mack and company are going to have to. Well, they're gonna have to get at Wilson and really not let him even have that one opening that he so often seems to find. What do you see happening here? And then give me a final score / prediction. What have you?
Yeah. Well, you know, I think it's going to be a pretty uncomfortable game. For both teams. I mean this in the most respectful way possible. I think the Bears offense is garbage.
It is.
I'm not a Trubisky guy. I would love to see what Nagy can do with him. I think you definitely are putting the right offensive mind in place there, but I think it's gonna take some time. You know, I do like your running backs. And I do like Allen Robinson. He's back. But I don't think you guys are going to score a lot of points. And that's going to keep Seattle in it because I think Seattle's going to be working really hard to get to 20 points. My guess is, you know, I'm probably leaning towards the Bears winning this one and probably something like a 23-21, 15, something like that, where, you know, it may be one of the least watchable Monday night games of the year.
Yeah.
If I'm wrong, I would love to see both offenses execute well. I'd love to see great plays by defense. You know, and the thing is, Earl Thomas is back now, and Earl Thomas showed that he's still the best safety in the game. With zero practices, he went out there and absolutely lit it up. I think the combination of him and Bobby Wagner is one of the top two middle linebackers in the NFL. Like, I think that's going to be real difficult too. So I imagine we'll probably see at least four turnovers in this one. And it'll probably come down to whoever scores last.
Okay, fair enough. I think we can all hope for better football, but that is, I agree. It doesn't really look too promising on paper. It would be pretty painful. Jackson, thanks for having me on. Thanks for taking the time. Really appreciate
it. Yeah, I appreciate it, man. And good luck to your boys every week except this one.
Same. I'll pass along the same sentiments.
All right. Sounds good, man. Thank you.
You can follow Jackson on Twitter at Jackson Bevins. That's at JACSON Bevins, BEVENS. And read all of his work at SB Nation's Field Goal Seahawks website. And follow us on Twitter at WC Gridiron. Follow me on Twitter at Robert Zaglinski. As always, stay classy, everybody.
Till the tears run down from my eyes, Lord. Somebody, ooh, somebody, can anybody find me somebody to love?
Alexa, play hits from Queen.
Okay.
Somebody to love.
With Amazon Music, a voice is all you need. Get tens of millions of songs. Download the Amazon Music app today.
Hello. I'm Spencer Hall from SB Nation, and I want to tell you about my new show, It Seemed Smart. It Seemed Smart is a show about people doing things that, for some reason or another, seemed smart at the time. Those things might include doing a little cocaine and driving a bike up a mountain. Or, I don't know, maybe racing 100 miles per hour across the country in the middle of the night with no one's permission. Or even stealing a bat from an umpire's room in a Major League Baseball park. Check it out, and if you like it, tell a friend. I'm Spencer Hall. Don't do anything smart.